Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It just wasn't a good ending in the last segment for you. It really wasn't. All right, so today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, and a fabulous service department that backs it all up every step of the way with great techs and pros. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com, one-stop vehicle shopping. When Bill Foley got the Vegas Golden Knights, they asked him how long would it take to win a Stanley Cup. He says, 7 years, maybe six. Well, in the sixth year, the Vegas Golden Knights are Stanley Cup champions.
Into the right circle. Bennett looking cross-ice. Stone intercepts. This time he sends it down in a waffle and go into the goal. It's a hat trick. And the clincher, Mark Stone, the captain, makes it 8-3 Golden Knights with 6 minutes to go in the third period. A devotion to destiny. Misfits to champions. The Vegas Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup in 2023.
And March's show ended up winning the Conn Smythe Trophy as the MVP. Do you know the last time an undrafted player won the Conn Smythe Trophy as the playoff MVP? Oh, I forgot. You don't know if it's not the Yankees or the Eagles. You have no idea. Okay.
I'm sure it was a very long time ago.
Wayne Gretzky.
That actually was going to be my first guess, but I thought it was too obvious of a guess.
Because remember, Wayne Gretzky signed at the age of 17 with the Indianapolis Racers in the WHA. He wasn't drafted. They signed him. And then the Racers, and I actually saw Gretzky play with the Racers, but saw him play against the Whalers. And he wore 17. He didn't wear 99. 17 for his age. And then he went, you know, the Racers, everything went off the rails for them. So he ended up going to Edmonton, and Edmonton then got absorbed in the merger, along with Winnipeg, Quebec, and Hartford. And that's how Gretzky got into the NHL. He was not drafted. But Jonathan March's show was the Conn Smythe Trophy winner. Only appropriate, he is one of the last six of the original Vegas Golden Knights who made the Stanley Cup Final the first year, beaten by Washington in five games. All right, you've had a lot of pent-up anger. What's the what's the next step to relieve the pain?
Well, first of all, I hope all the whiny, crying, spoiled brat Boston fans are crying even more today, seeing Bruce Cassidy, the guy who they chased out of there, now hoisting the cup. I just love every minute of that, and I can't wait to talk more about that with the King on Friday. I'm just putting that out there. That's just fantastic theater
well,
right there.
I can tell Bruce Cassidy's story right here. I'll do that in the interest of keeping the audience. Jack Eichel is from North Chelmsford, which is right up by, it's near Lowell, and it's right up by the New Hampshire border. And Eichel, a buddy of his, because Eichel ended up going to BU, Boston University, had a buddy of his getting married on Cape Cod. And Bruce Cassidy, because of his time with the Bruins, and he'd been on the job as the head coach of the Golden Knights for about a week. Cassidy, though, with his time in Boston, had a place on the Cape. So he finds out that Eichel's going to be there for the wedding, and he gets a hold of Eichel and says, hey, look, you know what? Like, let's meet. He goes, okay, great. All right, no problem. So they pick out the Buttercup Cafe in Barnstable. And for the uninitiated, Barnstable is the township on the Cape where Hyannis is, but Hyannis is in the southern part of the township, and the town of Barnstable is more to the north on the Bayside. So they meet at a place called the Buttercup Cafe. And this would be 51 weeks ago, so it would be next week. And they sit down at 10 in the morning, and for a little more than 4 hours, Cassidy wants to get to know Eichel, but at the same time wants to convey to him, like, look, I know that you are an ultra-talented player, that things in Buffalo did not go right, and you can bring that talent and the ability to not only make us better, but to be a leader and to make everybody else around you better. And that was the concept, because he had been used to that by having a major league leader who had the ability to make everybody around him better in Patrice Bergeron. And he wanted to take what he learned from being around Bergeron and impart it to Eichel, because he felt Eichel could do the same thing for Vegas. And this lasted for a little more than 4 hours. And the people at the cafe, at the Buttercup Cafe, were sitting there, and they're looking over, and they're like, and the guy they recognized right away was Eichel. And they kept saying, that guy looks a lot like Eichel. And then finally somebody said, well, that looks like Bruce Cassidy. Well, Cassidy went up to pay the bill. And so the young man who had been serving went over and he said, are you Jack Eichel? He says, yeah. And he says, could I have a couple of pictures? And he said, absolutely, took pictures. And then outside with Cassidy, he did the same thing. But it was that meeting that may have set the tone for what we saw, because this was Eichel's first ever trip to the playoffs, and he performed so well. And it was in Game 3 where he got absolutely laid out. He came back in the game. And you can tell from his teammates, he is universally respected. And some of that is him, no question, and some of that is an offshoot of the conversation that the coach and the star had in meeting each other for the first time on Cape Cod 51 weeks ago. Communication, you cannot put a price on what communication means in the ability just to get the best out of people, because then everybody knows where they stand with what is going on. And that's really important. And Cassidy understood that. He was able to take an example like a Patrice Bergeron and was able to translate that to a guy like Jack Eichel. And Eichel made a big difference. He may not have won the Conn Smythe Trophy, but he was a huge reason why they won. Now we can get back to your hatred. Story over.
No, but that's perfectly said right there. There you go. There you go. Now, as to what happened...
I just want to let everybody know I still had a role in the show.
There you go. Now, as to what happened in the Subway Series last night, yet another Mets pitcher...
Nobody even knows about that. People were watching the Stanley Cup or else actually out having a good time.
And sure, we'll go with that with the A's fans. But this is a message for everybody. This is a message for the Mets, Domingo Germán, who's been caught multiple times with it, everybody else that's been caught and given a 10-day suspension with the...
I have to tell you what, Domingo Germán made my broadcast.
Oh, boy.
I can't remember which game. I think it may have been Trenton. And one of the players for Trent was at the plate, a right-handed hitter, swung and missed, and the bat went flying out of his hands, and it went toward the Trenton dugout, and it hit the netting. And I said, I'll tell you right now, I said, if that had been Domingo Germán at the plate, that never would have happened.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Everybody in the press box lost it.
There you go. I like it.
It's true. Guy. I mean, you're a guy. I mean, you got one guy pitching with spider tack, then he doesn't pitch with it, loses to the Red Sox. I mean, it's like, you could just tell they got problems.
But at least he's recovered since then.
They recovered what? They went out. He didn't pitch well the other night. You know, it's like, you could just tell. It's like, I'm going to try it without it. No, I've got to go back to it.
At least he knows where guys are on base and all that good stuff, unlike Luis Severino. But that's another topic. But just, this goes for everybody. Just stop trying and just play the game the right way. Is it really that hard? If you really have to keep going to this day in and day out to skirt around the rules and use this stuff to try and get an advantage, then really, what good are you? Do you really deserve to be on the major league level? You don't, in my view. You really don't. You deserve to be in the minors if you have to consistently try to skirt around the rules to use this sticky stuff. And this goes for anybody that tries to use the PEDs and they don't get caught or anything else like that. Just play the game clean the right way and good things will happen. That's all. It's not that hard. Put more effort into playing the game right than skirting the rules, and actually maybe you might be a half decent player.
You just called out 40% of your starting pitching staff.
If Garrett Cole's still skirting the rules, then yes, absolutely. I'm calling him out. We haven't seen any factual evidence yet since then. But you know what? It may not have been caught doing it again. And if he is, then yeah, I'm calling him out. Absolutely.
Then you got a team like the A's. They all do it right and they're not winning.
Yeah. Touche.
Darn. None of the A's have been caught doing anything wrong. Well, that explains something.
That's a Triple-A team full 360 degrees worth. The Yankees' offense is just Triple-A for the most part. At least they still have some competent MLB players, and we'll get them back, we think. The A's just no. Not even close.
Yeah. Ah, boy. Yeah, it's amazing. Let's see. I was looking at the PIAA softball and baseball championships are taking place, and I think they're couple of local teams, like local meaning Center County, in it, including Bald Eagle Area Softball and Bellefonte Baseball. I mean, needless to say, that's going to pack those two places.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's... Yeah, it's going to pack those two places. Let's see here. Yeah, I think they're both in it. So, and it's going to be here, by the way.
And Bald Eagle Area Softball beat out South Williamsport in a hard-fought game to get to that point. So that was a Central PA regional state semifinal.
Right, yeah. And so there, but you know what? Bald Eagle Area, you know, softball in Center County has been really good for a long time, whether it was Penns Valley, Phillipsburg, Osceola, Bald Eagle Area, Bellefonte Steakhouse, it's been really good for a long time. And that's... that's a big part of this. I mean, is how good it's... And I can't explain to you why it's been as good as it's been. I can't.
And then in baseball, it is Bellefonte and the District 2 champ Dallas Friday afternoon at Lebrano Park.
Yeah, that's Dallas from the Back Mountain region. I lived in Dallas for 2 years when I was at the Penn State Wilkes-Barre campus. Beautiful area. That's why when I went back up to see my buddy Rick Barry and his wife Sue, because Rick delivered the commencement speech, and by the way, gave a phenomenal speech. they wanted the two of us to just to talk to the graduates at their informal senior day, the day before commencement. And so when it was done, I took a quick trip around Huntsville Dam, went back into Dallas, poked around, you know, just drove around for a couple minutes and then drove out of there. So, yeah, brought back some good memories along the way, you know. So great, you know, being around people like that where people didn't complain. All right, so, what? No?
Oh, my almighty!
No. One there. There's the picture in the elevator going up to the press box at Medler Field Lebronto Park is the sellout, and it's actually the last time Belfont was in the state championship game. It's not a Penn State game or a Spikes game. It was Belfont. That's the picture in the elevator. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back more in a moment. Jerry Dulac, final half hour. Might be good to talk to a guy like that. Just, you have any more complaints? Are you done? Or?
I think I've gotten everything off my chest today. Thank you.
Wow. What a relief for all of us. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Goes to Drew Smith. Bill Miller looks at his hand and throws him out. And Smith can't believe it. Showing his hand again. So they checked him when he came in from the bullpen. They didn't like what they saw, so that's a 10-game suspension for him. The rest of the Mets infield checking out the hand themselves, but he is out. And the Mets now have to play a pitcher short while he's on suspension.
That is the key there, and that's what Buck Showalter's thinking about right now.
F-O-U-L-E-D, that spells founder!
Things go from bad to worse for the Mets. Still the most popular team in New York. No?
No, senor!
They actually want the team blown up already.
The Mets are not a fun team. It is. They're just not.
And guess who said they were overrated? This guy right here. Too old. Verlander's seen his better days. Max Scherzer's definitely seen his better days. He got shelled in that fourth or fifth inning that the Yankees scored and came back and took the lead, five-run fifth. The hitters can't stay healthy.
From 2010 till now, how many World Series have the Yankees been to?
That would be a goose egg.
Yeah, you're the most overrated team in baseball. All right, seriously. At least the Mets have gone. You have gone to none, and you have spent hundreds of millions of dollars. Hundreds of millions of dollars and have no World Series appearances. Who is the most overrated team in baseball?
No, I don't totally disagree with that.
Okay, you can't. You've spent hundreds of millions. You've spent literally, okay, literally have spent on payroll in the last 12 and a half years over $1 billion and have nothing to show for it. San Francisco Giants have won three times. The Kansas City Royals have been to the World Series twice. Yeah, the Red Sox have won twice. St. Louis Cardinals. The Texas Rangers have been to two World Series in that time. The Philadelphia Phillies went to the World Series. The Dodgers have been to the World Series. Houston, Washington have all been to the World Series. Right? You have none. Zero.
Yeah, I get it.
And you're over there telling me us that that's the most overrated team in baseball. Your franchise is the most overrated franchise in sports. You spent literally almost $1.5 billion on payroll and don't even have a championship appearance, let alone win it. And you're out there telling us that that's the most overrated team, that's the most overrated player, okay? If they had spent $1.5 million on payroll and had Bupkis, then you could make that claim.
In terms of this year, because the Mets were projected to be a better team than the Yankees.
Won yet. Guess what?
This
what
year,
if they come
least.
Back and win it? You don't know that. You don't even know what the results of this year happen to be.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Let's read in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory with great warranties, great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a fabulous service department to back it all up with great technicians. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online, sunburymotors.com. One of the best in the business. Always enjoy every second I spend with him or talk to him. That's Jerry Dulac. Jerry, welcome back, my friend.
Steve, always good talking with you, my friend. It's good to be with you. And, as much as I love the Masters, and you know I do, because of the history and the tradition and the beauty, from a pure shot-making and competitive standpoint, you give me the U.S. Open and the British Open, and I find the competition a little more captivating.
The test of golf of this, I mean, the champion really is the champion. You don't get away with much at this, do you?
No, you don't, and that's what I like about it. And typically, it's not a birdie fest. It's kind of hold on to the steering wheel and make sure you don't crash, and it's the person who avoids the big numbers typically is what I look for and pay attention to when you get to the weekend. Now, you look at what John Rahm did at Augusta, making double bogey and then going on to win. As you can well imagine, that's something of a rarity. You don't see that happen too often. In the U.S. Open, you do that. You're giving away more shots to the field because there's more birdie opportunities at Augusta National. And there'll be some here at L.A. North. I'm really curious to see this golf course. You know, Steve, George Thomas has designed three courses out there in Hollywood, Riviera, Bel Air, and right. L.A. North and South. And I've played Riviera and I've played Bel Air. And, of course, I love them both. I really like Bel Air. And I think L.A. North plays a little bit more like Bel Air. But I'm just curious to see, with Gil Hans's restoration, I'm just curious to see both the look and how it plays. But you got some really cool holes out there and, some really demanding holes. You know, it starts with a par 5. It's a lot like Riviera. He just gets you off onto the golf course. Nothing too demanding, a little soft downhill. I think it's 574, but that's nothing for those guys. And that's kind of like his calling card. Get you started with a soft par 5. and go from there. Although I'm thinking about Bel Air, and I think Bel Air started with a par four, but nonetheless, I just think it's a neat array of holes, a nice mix, and like I said, I don't want to say it. I think they're going to eat it up because I don't think that's the case. But I don't think this is going to be a grueling test of golf. I think it's going to be a question of, who just navigates a golf course that they, let's face it, really haven't seen a whole lot other than this week.
And it's interesting, after you play one, which is, as you mentioned, the par five, the next 17 holes only have two more par fives and five par threes.
Right.
And one that can play as short as 75, 80 yards. And one that can play as long as 290.
Yeah, the 290 one, little downhill. So, it'll probably play, more like 250, 260. But for those guys, that's probably a 5-iron. And depending on the wind right. And if they want to bounce it up, depending on how firm, who knows with some of those guys, could be a 6-iron. But, yeah, and the 15th hole is the short one. And I saw it today where they said it could play as short as 68 yards. But it's just such a neat hole. It's like almost like a horseshoe green, and more like a boomerang, if you will. And it just looks like it would have some really cool pin positions. And I was hearing some of the guys say yesterday that if the pin is on the front right, I think they said that you might see there's really nowhere to go at that pin, and you might see guys play short of the green. Imagine that, Steve, a 68 yard, that's what it would be, a 68 yard par three, and they're deliberately trying to play short of the green.
Part of when I've seen Gil Hance and his hands on a course, I love what he does with it, especially what he does with the landscape of it. But what I usually notice about the greens is that you have to hit a spot, and if you don't, the possibility of rolling into a bailout area it's there. That part is the part to me that's not crazy. I'm not crazy about, because you hit the target and the target doesn't let you keep it.
Steve, I'm with you in this regard, and I agree. I like his restoration work. Now,
yes,
when he went into Doral and redid that. That was not roundly received by the players. They did not like what he did, but I loved what he did at Southern Hills.
Yes.
I really liked what he did at Brookline. I thought Southern Hills was dramatic, the way he brought the creeks back into play. I will see what this is, and I saw last week what he's doing at Oakmont, at least with the front nine. And if you've been out to Oakmont and you look at what he's done on the front nine, it's nothing dramatic, but if you know Oakmont and know where the bunkers were and
yes.
how the fairways were, you can see, if you pay attention, he added a little wider fairway here. Oh, yeah, look, he flattened out the green here, created a better pin position. You talk about the runoffs. He took the runoff behind the third green, which cost Tiger the U.S. Open.
He took that
out and made that all rough. So now, which is very easy to do on that hole, because you hit it and go over the green. Now it's going to be held up by the rough. And instead of it going 40, 50 yards, 30, 40 yards over the green and just facing a really, really delicate, if not impossible, pitch shot. So I like what he's done from a restoration standpoint. He's going to start the back at Oakmont in preparation for the 2025 Open. He's going to start that in September. But they have opened up the front to the members. They'll close it down to the back September 11th. But what I've seen from all the different places, I like when he gets in there and gets his hands on some restoration and refurbishing, not necessarily a total redo.
Because I love what he does with the land. I think he understands what the original intent happened to be,
yeah.
And he tries to put his personal touch on the original intent. And that's what I've always liked about how he's gone about his business in terms of golf courses that he has put his hands on.
And it's funny too, Steve. A decade ago, the Open doctor, if you will, was Rhys Jones.
Yes.
Now the Open doctor who they're bringing in is Gil Hance.
Yeah.
And he redid Pinehurst number four.
Yeah.
Corin Crenshaw did number two.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's become the refurbisher du jour, and seems to be. Now I don't know, Pinehurst is next year, then Oakmont, then Shinnecock. I don't know if they brought him in at Shinnecock. You know, somebody asked me today, why are they redoing Oakmont? And I thought, I don't have a real good question. I mean, answer for that, Steve. But yeah. Because I see what they're doing, and it looks like they're trying to make it actually more fair, almost easier, if you will, because they're giving them more area to hit the ball. But I think the beauty of what they're doing is they're creating more options. They're putting more decision-making into your shots. Okay, do I want to try and take on those bunkers to that wider area there, or should I land it short here and maybe have a more difficult line to the pin? And I think that's what Gil Hance tries to do. He's not necessarily making it tougher. The only thing that makes it tougher, Steve, is drastic weather and nasty, nasty rough, which apparently we're going to see here. But I think that's what he's doing at Oakmont, and that's what he did at the other places, and I think that's why what he's doing is viewed very favorably.
Yeah. Obviously, the LIV PGA story is a huge story, and Jay Monahan, because of a medical issue, was not on hand to talk about it right now, and hopefully Jay Monahan's going to be okay. But what's the sense you get from players, and that's what is your personal sense of what this can mean?
Well, I have several different thoughts about it, Steve. Like everybody, totally shocked, totally blindsided, totally surprised. When everybody saw that blurb come across their cell phone that they've merged, and everybody thought, are you kidding me? Nobody saw that coming. So that alone was stunning. Now, as some of the layers are being peeled away, we're seeing what it means. But I don't think there's any question the PGA Tour, let's face it, Steve, they're the most powerful, grandest tour, have been and will continue to be, a tour that has the upper hand. Why would they take this on? Why would they do this when they are the premier tour in the world? And the LIV Tour, let's face it, a startup tour that's trying to find its way with television, with sponsors, world ranking points. Why would the PGA Tour, quote, jump into bed with them and infuriate a lot of people, including, most importantly, the rank and file, their players? Now,
right.
I think some of that is dissipated from what Jay Monahan and probably more significantly what Jimmy Dunn is saying on his media tour, if you will. But you know what, Steve? I'm going to wait until I hear from the other side. I'm going to wait until I hear from the Saudi people, the PIF people, the Public Investment Fund, because there is no way they're going to make a capital investment to support the DP World Tour, who are the real winners here, if you ask me, because they've lost their sponsors, their prize money, and their players. They've either gone to LIV or they're playing for the money on the PGA Tour. There is no way they're going to make a capital investment like this and just say, okay, we want to invest in your tour and everything's going to stay the same. There is no way. When you put up that kind of money, you want to have some kind of say. And until I hear from them and hear what their feelings are or what their plan is, I'm not going to sit here and think this is a win-win for the PGA Tour, because, first of all, it's just a bad look. Rory McIlroy said he felt like the sacrificial lamb. There he is, parading out for the PGA Tour and showing his support, both verbally and with his actions. And then, he feels like the scapegoat when he finds out that this tour that he hates, that the PGA Tour is all of a sudden in bed with them. So, I'll just kind of hold off on it. It's just a bad look, though, for the tour, and we'll see how it plays out. But there's no question there'll be a pathway back for those players who left to go to the LIV Tour to come back to DP World Tour or the PGA Tour, because, again, they are not going to put up that kind of money and have their players have the PGA Tour tell their players or tell them what they're going to do. I'll wait till I see that happen.
Yeah, I mean, you and I both know money talks. That's the one area where the PGA Tour could not outlast LIV. They can't outlast them on the money part of it. And if they have to keep throwing more money into purses and so forth to compete with Liv, because, again, Liv has unlimited funds, does that mean Korn Ferry goes away? Does that mean the Champions Tour goes away? I mean, what do you have to do to sacrifice to compete financially with them? And I wonder if that entered into it.
Well, I don't think there's any question it entered into it. I'll tell you where else it entered into it, maybe even more significantly, was in litigation. All lawsuits,
yes,
of course, in future litigation disappears,
yep,
as does, according to the PGA Tour, according to Jimmy Dunn, so does all recruitment of PGA Tour players, which I believe. You know, they want to stop the acrimony. They want to stop the divide. That is the positive in this whole thing, if,
yep,
in fact, that's the case. But that's a big reason, because there's no way the PGA Tour can fight the Live Tour in court on an equal financial basis, because they, mm-hmm, just don't have those kinds of deep pockets. And I think the irony here, speaking of the finances, Steve, is that the Live Tour came about, and the PGA Tour's response was to ask its sponsors to double their money. They basically doubled the purses. You know, they're paying out $3 point some million,
mm-hmm,
in these elevated events. And so if they put themselves in a financial bind, which you have to think they have, because this is why they made this deal, it's because they reacted, quote, overreacted to the Live Tour. And so, but you can understand to a degree why that happened, in that they were losing their players and they didn't want to lose any more. And guys, right, were getting offers. Ricky Fowler, $70 million, turned it down. Jason Day had an offer, turned it down. You know why? Because it wasn't enough money. Right. Steve, I'm a firm believer. You know, the old WWE wrestler Ted DiBiase, the million-dollar man, always said his whole slogan was, every man has his price. And that's,
yep,
true. It's just,
yep,
a question of when do you reach it, you know? And so that's where, you know, that's the irony of why the tour is kind of in this position, because they overreacted, in my opinion, to what Liv was doing. Then again, Steve, I really don't know what Jay Monahan was supposed to do. I think, right, he's mishandled the whole situation, and I say
agree.
That not knowing, I mean, not being able to say, mm-hmm, I don't know what he was supposed to do, to be perfectly honest.
Right. There's usually a core group that can win this. I think Jack Nicklaus always said he could walk into the locker room and knew which six guys he had to beat.
Right.
The others were pretty much out of it. So who's in that core group in your mind that can win this, that we should look at?
Well, you know, it's funny, because a couple of years ago, if you remember, I think Brooks Koepka said at the Masters, if I'm not mistaken, maybe it was at one of the Open, I think he said, of our, you know, whatever the field size was, he felt there were only 15 guys who could beat him, you know.
Yeah.
So
right.
You're looking at the same thing, but I don't think there's any question. The core group, the top three are Brooks Koepka. How could you bet against him after what he,
yep,
after what he did at the Masters and the PGA? Scottie,
mm-hmm,
Scheffler, if Scottie Scheffler can even hole half the putts he's looking at,
oh,
he's going to run away with this, because,
yep,
his ball striking has just been phenomenal. And yet he's just not making putts, and he's up on every leaderboard anyway. So if he starts making putts, forget it. He's going to win. And then it's tough, you know, it's tough to bet. I'm not bet against John Rahm, but certainly it's tough to bet against him. Five of his 12 wins are in California, including his U.S. Open championship.
Mm-hmm.
He did not play well at the PGA. Then you got a couple others. Steve, I really like Victor Hovland. I know you could throw Rory in there too, but, you know, something's missing from Rory, and I don't know what it is. Two-time Open champ, but something's missing. And part of it is his wedge game is terrible. And then you got the tier, and I don't even know that Victor Hovland is not in that upper tier, because you've seen what he's done in his last three majors. He's right there, and he won the Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
I like Victor Hovland here. And, you know, and Jordan Spieth, an Open competitor,
yep,
he has to stay away from big numbers. But I think you look at those four guys, and you want to throw Victor Hovland in maybe. But I think three in particular, put Rory as the fourth guy, and that's your top four in terms of you know, who can win this. And that's not to discount a guy like Patrick Cantlay, who grew up playing out there, went to school there.
Mm.
You know, he could very well be a factor as well.
what I do wonder about Rory, which is the same thing, believe it or not, I wondered about Dawn Staley at the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament. You see, she spent so much time talking about the issues of women's sports that I felt she did not coach a good game at all and didn't seem engaged in coaching in the Iowa game. I really felt that. And I feel like Rory has had to spend so much time with the politics of it. I wonder what it's meant to his game. It's just an open question, not anything I know about.
Yeah. It's an observation. No, I didn't even think of that in the case of the women's championship, but I don't think there's any question with Rory to the point. You know, one, he canceled his press conference for today or yesterday? Because one, I'm sure he addressed the Liv situation last week. He's tired of talking about it. But you have to think it's also like, okay, you know, I need to focus on what I'm doing here. I was shocked when, I think it was at Augusta, that he did the live interview on Saturday, you know, yes, walking down the fairway. I get that in a regulatory event, but with all the attention being placed on him and all the focus that he was talking about, that he wanted to commit to trying to win the Masters and get the green jacket. And when I saw him agreeing to do an interview, I thought, God, Nick Faldo would never do that. Tiger Oof. Would never do that. Jack would never do that, you know? And I think Rory has to pay, and he is. He's a great guy, and it's hard to condemn a guy who's very honest and open with the media. But I think he needs to back off a little and focus a little bit more on the game as opposed to I know the media is asking him questions instead of putting his views out there as often as he does. And that's no criticism of him. It's just I think he should do a little bit. He should find a way to say no a little bit more.
And Koepka wouldn't do it.
That's right. He's not going to do it. That's exactly right.
He would know. In fact, he was asked about the merger. I think it was yesterday, and he says, that was last week. I'm here to win.
Right. Right.
He doesn't want to worry about that stuff.
And it just shows on the golf course. And I think the good thing about this, Steve, real quickly is, and I think we talked about this, about the Masters. I saw this at the Masters. I saw the acrimony disappear, and I saw more of a harmonious approach from the players. Okay, and then when Koepka is there in the lead for 3 days, almost wins, it didn't dawn on me. I saw that nobody cared that he was a LIV Tour player.
That's right.
You know, Phil finishes second. Patrick Reed is three of the top six were LIV players. All anybody cared about and realized was, doesn't matter where they play, we want to see the best players in the world. And the same with Koepka winning in the PGA. And I really believe the Masters was the beginning of facilitating this partnership between the three tours. The people understood, everybody, including the players, we need to have the best players in the world at the biggest times. And this is the only way this is going to happen.
Perfectly said. Perfectly said. Jerry, thanks so much. Great to hear from you, my friend.
Steve, always good chatting with you. And I was a little saddened by my daughter's graduation in May, because that means my trips to State College will be fewer and far between.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. We're going to have to figure out how to straighten that out.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll sneak up there. You can bet on that.
Yeah, thanks so much. And I look forward to seeing you next.
You got it, man. Good talking with you, Steve.
Jerry Dulac. Great to talk with him. Great information. Such a positive guy, have you noticed that?
I love Jerry.
Logan Rich, you know? Yeah. Talked about his daughter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I ask you what makes you happy. You don't mention your wife or kids. It's just, I worry. Back with more in a moment.